Accession number 12708, Mr. R.W. Hawksworth, Reel 3.
W. Hawksworth, Reel 3. You were talking about the weekend passes, Mr. Hawksworth, and the journeys into London. What other ways of leisure was the? Was there a small township in the area that you were camped?
Well, Brookwood Camp wasn't far from the village of Blackdown, in any case, where there was a local cinema. An Aldershot was not that far away. Guildford was a favourite place for chaps to go for a night out. And the village afforded coffee houses, there was a tea shop or two. But most of the time, soldiers spent in barracks. There was everything one needed in the barracks. We had a garrison cinema, a good gymnasium, a fine, absolutely fine gymnasium, and most people had some form of indoor activity connected with the gymnasium. In fact, I started to learn swinging in the enclosure as a boy in the gymnasium.
You didn't go out very often, yourself?
I went out very rarely. We were not allowed out in any case for the confines of the barracks unless accompanied by a man. Boys were not allowed out on their own, so we were constrained again by lack of finances, so we found our enjoyment either on the sports field in the gymnasium or rambling around in the local woods, of which there were plenty.
You didn't get any of the young boys who did try to get out without being seen or under different conditions?
Oh, I believe once or twice, one or two of the lads nipped smartly out unnoticed by the NCOs or the other authorities. Successfully, as far as I know. I can't remember anyone ever being caught.
Punishments against any fall in discipline for young boys, did that differ from the other soldiers, either in severity or whatever it might be?
I think that the authorities, although realised that we were juniors on boy service, we were still subject to military law, and if we broke the military law, we were hammered just as much as anyone else.
What were the usual activities that the band became involved in?
Well, the band proper, the instrumentalists, were involved in various routines. Thursday nights, they would be across at the officers' mess, which was the regimental officers' dinner night. Every Sunday, almost every Sunday, they would lead a company or two down to the garrison church in Blackdown. And during the summer months, they would be engaged on paid engagements elsewhere in the country, sometimes up in Newcastle, Torquay, Bournemouth, or even in the parks in London, for which they received a pittance.
Was there some kind of band fund to which
yes,
money went into?
Any monies accrued from engagements, paid engagements, which took place outside the confines of the barracks, went into the band fund. Split into ratios, the band fund being top, the bandmaster, then the band sergeant, down to the junior bandsman, each of whom got a share. But the most of the money went into the band fund. And the president of the band fund, who was usually the second commander of the battalion, was responsible for ensuring fair play in this respect.
Did the army provide the instruments all the time, or did you have to earn money to help with that?
No, all the instruments were band property, regimental property, in fact, provided by the battalion. Although certain of the bandsmen and one or two boys did eventually purchase their own instruments and kept them privately. The band also had the dance band, which were engaged at frequent intervals at Blackdown, maybe four times a week. And one or two of the boys used to play regularly with the dance band.
They were
the ones who had all the money.
Church parades. Did you have to attend those every morning as a boy soldier? Every Sunday morning?
No. Maybe six or seven boys played out with the band on the march. At that stage, I wasn't sufficiently proficient. And along with the other learners, we would stay in barracks on the Sunday morning, sometimes given an odd job of cleaning up the band practice room, or cleaning up our bits of kit, or usually on the hockey field.
Who was responsible for drawing up the programme for an activity, the musical programme?
Well, the band master, who was overall in charge, prepared the complete training programme for which the band sergeant was responsible. He in turn would issue the necessary instructions to the corporal and the land corporals, and then down to ourselves.
The band would have a special uniform. What kind of uniform was that?
Well, the band dress uniform consisted of a dark green peaked cap, a bright red, one might call crimson tunic, with shoulder pieces, and dark blue trousers, down the side of which ran a red stripe, and light boots, with a white belt, and a pouch which was worn connected to a strap which ran across the chest, with the pouch on the back which was carrying the march cards.
The boys that played in the band would have the same uniform?
Oh yes, we all had a band dress uniform almost as soon as we were recruited.
And where did you keep that?
That was kept suitably shrouded behind one's bed, hanging on the wall.
Well, with your training basically over, what happened to you next?
Well, when we were we'd reached a certain pitch of efficiency, one might say, the band master would have you in and say, "We think time's come now for you to join the full band." And so, with effect from tomorrow, or possibly the following day, you will turn in to full band practice with the remainder of the band.
Did you have any weapon training to do?
Yes, we did. This was always looked forward to. It was an interesting break from the band routine. Our instructor was a man called Sergeant Flanagan, who later became a quartermaster of the battalion. He would take us on foot drill and occasionally on weapon training. At about that time, the new light machine gun had just been introduced, the Bren gun, and it was well known in the battalion that some of the boys from the band were more proficient on the Bren gun than they were elsewhere in the battalion. So we did lots of weapon training, and we also went on the open range and were taught to shoot.
Did that include marching with rifles?
This included rifle drill. We did rifle drill. We were taught to fix bayonets, unfixed bayonets, slope arms and shoulder arms. In fact, all the rifle exercises that the men were taught.
Did the training that you did that include long marches with weapons and equipment?
I can't remember attending a route march during those early days. I know the soldiers went out on route marches, and on occasions the band would go out in transport and meet them halfway and bring them back in the barracks. But I never attended a route march, and I don't think any of the boys did.
What happened to you when you became a full adult soldier? Was this before you went abroad?
No, I didn't attain the age of 18, which was considered to be man's age, until we would arrive in Shanghai on September the 13th. I was one of the last boys to become a man at the age of 18. Shortly after then, it was reduced to 17 and a half.
You hadn't been in all that long in the army, Mr. Hawkes, before the question of going abroad came up.
No, in fact, it was about 7 or 8 months after I joined that we were notified that the battalion had been placed under orders to proceed on foreign service. We weren't told at that time just where we were about to go to, but plans were set in motion to give us the necessary clothing and equipment to take us out to this foreign post. There was much to-ing and fro-ing from the local regimental tailor, who had to enlist various assistants. Khaki drill was issued, usually in the wrong size. All this had to be put right. The large, old-fashioned topi headgear was issued. Mine almost covered me completely. And it was a great day when they were eventually discarded. But that's another point. A lot of time was spent in fitting, refitting, tailoring and measuring in readiness for the trip out to foreign parts. Quite interesting.
What made up your khaki drill?
We were issued with three khaki drill shirts, three pairs of shorts, a hose top with a sort of a footless stocking which one pulled over one's ordinary stock before your boot went on, around the bottom of which a short putty was placed. I remember they were coloured khaki with a dark, light infantry green top which was turned down.
What was the process of putting on a putty?
A putty is best described as a bandage. It was khaki colour in those days, although some regiments had them in varying colours. Ours were khaki. The putty was rolled around the ankle in an outer direction, and anyone who's been taught first aid and knows anything about a spiker bandage will know exactly what I'm talking about. It was like rolling a bandage around one's ankle and finally fastening a tape around the centre of it and tucking it in.
Were they comfortable to wear?
If they were put on properly, yes. But in the early days, I certainly found that one was inclined, in the interest of smartness, to put them on too tight. And this could have caused your feet to swell, and you had to take them off and readjust them.
How did you feel about going abroad as a young boy, not long in the army, and this crops up? What were your feelings?
Well, we were keen on getting out overseas. In fact, most of the boys who by that time I knew well had joined the army to get overseas in any case and see a bit of the world. Also, we had from time to time chaps coming back from our 2nd Battalion who were in India on the frontier at that time. They were coming home with tales of foreign countries, and we were all just waiting there for crack at it.
Did you get embarkation leave?
Yes, we were given, after the dust had settled and all the khaki drill had been stowed away and properly packed, we were given a month's leave to get off home, with our free rail warrant, of course, to say goodbye to our parents and families before we returned and embarked to foreign parts.
How did your family take the news that you were going abroad?
Well, my mother thought it was a long way to go. By this time, I should have added, that we'd been told that our destination was Shanghai in China. And I don't think my mother knew quite where it was at that time anyway. She soon found out and constantly remarked to my father that it was a long way to send a boy. My father told her that it was all in a soldier's day's work anyway.
About what date was this when you went on leave?
October went off. I think it was just after my birthday. I missed being at home for my birthday on the 13th of September, so it must have been late September.
Leaving home as you did, what was happening then? Obviously your parents, or your mother particularly, would be very upset.
Well, my mother was concerned, but my father reassured her, and my father had actually been down and experienced army life himself anyway, and he had spent some time down with my uncle, with the battalion, on odd occasions, and knew that I was in with a good lot, and she'd no need to worry. She was worrying unduly. I toward the end of my leave, began to get a bit upset myself because my mother was getting a bit overexcited about the whole matter. But eventually, when the time came for me to get back up or get back down to the battalion, everything was peaceful. My mother accepted it was a part of the job, and so she was quite calmed down by then.
Did you have a medical before you left?
Oh yes, we all had a strict medical, and there were odd cases where the chaps were taken off the embarkation roll due to some physical disability or other.
Did that include injections?
No, you mentioned injections. We all had arms like, well, I don't know. We had at least five injections, and at that time, China, particularly North China, was known to be cholera-ridden, so we had cholera needles, we had tetanus needles, we had anti-tetanus needles. I think we had a yellow fever needle. We had lots of needles. In fact, we all had a needle.
When you were injected, what happened? Were you excused duties?
Yes. After the first injection, we were given 48 hours, and it really knocked us back. It was the first, as far as I can remember, it must have been the first that anybody had ever had, and it took effect. So we needed the 48 hours excused duties. We'd been told by all the soldiers that in earlier days, after a chap had had one of these inoculations, as a proper word is, they wore a coloured band around the bruised part of the arm so as to ward off the other fellows.
What was the date that you left England?
I know it was in November, and I can't remember the embarkation date.
Where did you leave from?
Southampton.
And how did you get there?
We went down to Southampton from Brookwood Station in a proper troop train, and it was an uneventful journey. I think everyone had realised just about then, having been back a few weeks from their embarkation leave, leaving the family behind, the idea had just sunk in, so it was a rather quiet troop train journey down to Southampton.
Were you played off? Was there any kind of ceremony when you...
Yes, we played on the quayside. Our own band played on the quayside, and there were one or two other regimental bands on the quayside to play it away. Our band played on the deck as the troopship pulled out, and the other bands on the quayside followed suit.
Do you recall the name of the ship?
Very well indeed. It was a new ship called the Dilwara. She'd only done, I think she'd only done two trips when we went on.
What was the accommodation like on board?
Well, there's only one way to describe that: Spartan. Hammocks were the order of the day, and the ship's permanent staff were absolute martinets. If a matchstick was seen on the deck, there was a terrible screen set up. Hammocks in the morning had to be rolled up and stacked down into the hammock room by an ungodly hour of a quarter of an hour after reveille, which is 5:30 on board. The blankets had to be rolled in such a fashion that from the end view they resembled Swiss rolls. And if they weren't in such a tidy fashion, they were rejected by the ship's quartermaster.
And you'd be inspected every morning?
Very closely, yeah. The ship was cleaned and maintained as far as everyday use is concerned by the soldiers, and it was like a brand new pin. I remember one instance regarding the conditions of cleanliness on this ship. At the end of our deck was the medical room, and soldiers requiring to visit the medical officer had to pass through or along our deck to gain access to the medical officer. And on occasions, our deck sergeant, the aforementioned Sergeant Flanagan, incidentally, who himself was a bit of a martinet, had these fellows pulling themselves hand over hand on the overhead racks so as not to put the feet on our clean troop deck. And that's how strict it was. Terrific.
What was the routine on board? Because it was a long journey.
Well, there were lots of things going. The battalion, of course, had officers and sergeants who had done all this before, and they had a good idea of how to keep the troops interested. One thing was not allowed, and that again was gambling, although it went on in various dark corners. The crown and anchor board, which the bane of a foreign soldier's life, was produced in the unlit alleys by members of the crew who made their fortunes. But generally speaking, there was plenty to do. The deck coits and the inevitable intercompany boxing matches took place, intercompany wrestling. There were lectures, endless lectures, interspersed with more inoculations, and generally speaking, the time went by quite nicely.
What were they lecturing you about?
We were lectured about what to expect at various ports. As we approached our first port of call, which was Port Said in Egypt, we were lectured on the environs of the town, how it stood at the head of the Suez Canal, and a general layout of the geography of the area. And so, as we went along towards our final destination, we knew a day or two in advance what to expect.
We were allowed off the ship.
We weren't allowed off on our own, but at each port of call, we were taken off and did a short march around the streets, much of the interest of the local populace. I think they used to call them natives in those days.
And did the band play for these marches?
No, we didn't. For some unknown reason, we didn't. I think that only on one occasion did the band play on the march, and that was at Singapore, when we stopped off at Singapore.
You said that you were, Reveille was 5:30 on the morning. What was the timing for meals during the course of the day on ship?
By 8 o'clock, everyone had to have had their bedding rolled up and handed in, breakfasted, and all the breakfast utensils cleaned up to the high polished standard of the equipment issued, and thereafter the daily program began. But 8 o'clock saw the start of the day with everything else behind it.
Daily program, what would that entail? You mentioned some things, I know, but was there...
Well, physical training was the first thing we did in the morning on the deck. There was plenty of room around. Physical training, boxing training. Most of the training, in fact, was more of a leisure type.
Were there other units on the ship with you?
Odd bods. They were odd persons rejoining the battalion. They'd been sent out as reinforcements or for other reasons. Maybe they'd been home on courses from abroad. But to all intents and purposes, the Durham battalion were the sole occupants of the ship.
Discipline on the ship, Mr. Hawkesworth, was that army or naval?
Well, once aboard, the soldiery came under direct command of an officer known as OC Troops. It was more or less the ship's commanding officer. Although our own CO was with us, we were literally placed under command of the permanent staff who ran the ship. And the discipline was absolutely strict. The cleanliness and the safety depended upon a strict code of conduct, I suppose. And to this end, the ship staffs were quite efficient. The one thing that sticks in my memory was one of the tasks allotted to us after each meal, the ship's equipment, which was used to bring food from the ship's cookhouse or galley, had to be put back for inspection after each meal in the fine state of cleanliness in which it had been received initially. And this this was done by using lots of hot water and whitening and elbow grease. But this was quite a job. This was quite a job. Metal plates to eat off, of course. And the cutlery was, to my mind, I think was made from bell metal. Nevertheless, it served the proper purpose and we got by.
Where did you eat?
Down on the mess decks. The mess deck was our home. We ate and slept on the mess deck, unless we went up on deck for fresh air or other leisure activities.
The food on the ship itself, was it better than what you've been used to, or no different?
I think, to be fair, the food on the ship wasn't as good as our own regimental cookhouse had served up. But then they didn't have the facilities on board ship. But I saw little food returned to the galley at all. I saw little food wasted, ever.
So was it much the same as what you had been getting?
Yes, I think it is. I think it was. I mean, the army had their ideas of the proper diet for a soldier, and it must have been basically the same.
Was there a canteen?
Yes, there was a ship canteen which was all run by the NAFI. Regular visit in the morning for biscuits and one thing or another. It was quite a good canteen, actually.
Was beer available to those that drank it?
Oh, obviously, yes.
Boys, you
yes. Well, the Geordie Battalion, there was quite a lot of beer disposed of, naturally. So we weren't allowed to drink it, of course, not to say we didn't have a sly swig now and again. But the men went along with the containers from the mess decks and came back and disposed of it.
Do you recall any men in the battalion or in your own unit that fell foul of the discipline on the ship and were punished as a ship's punishment?
I don't think any of our people suffered a punishment on the ship. I don't think anybody fell foul of the regulations. I'm pretty sure they didn't, no.
Had you the same commanding officer going out to China as you had at Blackdown?
Yes. Yes, Colonel Gray Wilson took us out. Not long after we'd arrived, I believe he had a change of command, but I'm pretty certain that Lieutenant Colonel Gray Wilson took us out to China.
How long did the journey last?
Almost 6 weeks. I remember by the time we'd almost reached Hong Kong, the threat of war was there. Apparent, and a decision was made at that time to disembark and leave behind a number of boys who had not yet reached or almost reached man service. This, of course, caused a bit of confusion, though I knew I'd be safe. I was almost on man service in any case, but to the best of my memory served me well, I think about 10 of the boys were taken off at Hong Kong and sent back home to England in order to keep them out of the possibility of the war zone.
Which war would this be?
This would be 39-45 war.
News coming back from what was happening in Europe.
And even in those early days, the powers that be had realised that there was something looming.
As a boy, you were seeing places that you never hoped to see. How did you take all these various ports and places that you were coming to?
No, it was great stuff all the way through. It was the most interesting journey. So I was certainly on the board. I don't think any of the others were, the men included. Some of them had been out that way before, but nowhere near as far as North China.